今、次の放送はファンによるファンのためのファン補充ポッドキャルチャーポッドキャストです。この番組はブランドスパンサーネリ君の財布の適用認定を送ります。
Hey guys, welcome back to another Mechatastic Island Priestess-erific episode of Fanholes Toku Thursdays. Hey, what's up guys? This is Derek, Derek WC. I'm going to be one of your kaiju-rific hosts tonight, but I am not alone. I am joined by my partner in crime. Say what's up.
What's up? This is Mecha Justin.
Yay. So, if you haven't figured it out, we're here to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. It is 50 years old. This was released March 21st, 1974. And Justin and I had this on the docket for Toku Thursdays for 2024 Fanholes lineup. So we're basically here to discuss the feature film. And I imagine there'll be a bunch of stuff to talk about. I don't know. Like, I was trying to think, like, this is, for me, this is one of those movies. But I guess before I don't know, before I get into it, I'm going to make you do this. Like, go ahead and read the short and sweet IMDb synopsis for anyone who has not seen Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
An Okinawan prophecy appears to foretell Earth's destruction at the hands of Godzilla. Only for the true Godzilla to reveal his doppelganger as a mechanical alien weapon.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, so I guess, you know, it's interesting because I think this is an era of Godzilla that I was always familiar with as a kid. I think I had a lot of VHS tapes of the various movies. So they all kind of become... Not that I don't have specific thoughts or feelings or preferences for certain movies over other certain movies, but I mean, as far as my first viewing of it, like, I don't know that I have like super distinct memories. I think this was bought in like a set of like, you know, like a 5-pack of VHSs, you know what I mean? Like where I got a bunch of movies all at once. So it was just, you know, this was when I was a kid and I got into like Godzilla overload or something, you know, and I just watched as many things as I could. Like, I don't know if I ever saw this on TV. I don't think so. Like what my memory of this film and how I was introduced to it was like some kind of 5-pack of VHS tapes that, you know, just had a bunch of different movies in it that I just voraciously ate up because I loved Godzilla so much. But I don't know. What about you? Like, do you have any recollection of how you were sort of introduced to this movie? Is it more specific than my recollection?
I don't remember the first time I saw it. It had to have been on local TV. I do have specific memories of going to a friend's house and spending the night. And one of the things we would usually do is we would go to rent a movie and then, you know, come back home and watch the movies, you know, stay up late, eat junk food, watch a bunch of movies. And whenever we would rent a movie, we would usually get we would get either a Star Trek or Star Wars film, and we would always get some kind of Godzilla movie. Mm. And I have specific memories of watching this one at a friend's house because, like, I know we had both seen it before. So we were like, there were certain scenes where we're like, oh man, I can't wait till this happens, and I can't remember till this happens. This is one of those movies where it got released under different names, and I got fooled because, like, you know, we're at the movie store, and, I'm like, oh man, like Godzilla versus the Cosmic Monster.
Right, right.
I've not seen that, so we rented it, and then we were like, hey, this is Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. Like, you fooled us, and we felt very like stupid, and you know that we got bamboozled, but we watched it anyway because it was Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, and you know we liked it. But like, I mean, back then, you know, late 80s, early 90s, like we didn't have access to any database or anything, so we didn't know like movies were released under different names, you know. It's like
right
Godzilla versus Mothra is also Godzilla versus the Thing, like that also fooled us. Okay. And We also didn't know that there was a standalone Rodan and Mothra movie. Like,
I remember
that friend's dad, like, he was telling us, he was like, oh, well, you know, Mothra had her own movie. And we were like, we kind of looked at each other and we looked at him and we were like, is that right? Like, is he, like, is he pulling our leg?
Misremembering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, we never saw Mothra and Rodan to rent in our neck of the woods. Like, I didn't even see Rodan until like 2001, where I found it on DVD at, like, you know, the cheapo bin at Walmart. I'm like, oh, holy shit, like, it's here real, it exists. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my god, like, I was so excited. Like, it sounds silly, I'm like, I'm 18 years old and I'll, you know, I'm doing all these things and I'm going to college, and I'm like, what I'm really excited about is to go home and watch Rodan on DVD for the very first time. I'm like, oh my god, this is gonna be so great. But this is one of those Godzilla movies that I like, I still enjoy to this day. However, the human stuff kind of like puts me to sleep, and
it's funny because
I fell asleep during this viewing. It's
funny that you mentioned that, because I told you I was gonna, I thought, you know, because I was doing a show today, I knew I wasn't gonna have any time to watch anything today, so I told you, all right, I'm gonna try to watch this Friday night. And sure enough, like, of course, it was late when we got done talking, and I still tried to, you know, watch the film, and sure enough, I conked out and I found myself waking up in the middle of the fight, and then I just said, ah, it's too late for this, you know, I already dozed off or whatever, and then I ended up watching it on Saturday without falling asleep or whatever. But so there was some aspect of me, you know, falling asleep. I feel like I should mention, because I always want to mention it, like, my mom loved Mothra, and so she was the one who would always, you know, she was the one that told me there was a solo Mothra movie and how she loved the, you know, the fairy princesses singing to Mothra and everything like that. So she always loved that stuff. So I think I always knew that there was a solo Mothra movie because of how much my mom liked Mothra. And I feel like this movie gets away with stuff. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm being too kind, you know, like, I know we have these discussions about how you have, you know, your memories are colored with the nostalgia goggles, you know, and how much you like the movies that you watch, even though, you know, and I don't want to be that guy, but I mean, I feel like universally, right, like, there's that aspect of that a lot of times the human element to the Godzilla movies, especially for young children, is the boring part, right? You want to get to the kaiju fights, and that's kind of where it's at. Having said all that, I think this, like, I was thinking about it today, and I don't know that I have, like, this grandiose Godzilla movie ranking, but, like, to me, like, of the Showa era, And putting aside, like, the nostalgia goggles I have for Godzilla versus Megalon, right? You know how giddy I got over talking about that movie. But putting all that aside, to me, I would say, like, the higher echelon of Godzilla movies are, like, the original Gojira, Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, Godzilla versus King Kong. Like, those are all top tier for me, Showa-era Godzilla movies. And way, way down at the bottom, and if I make anybody mad, I don't really care, but, like, the lowest for me is, like, Godzilla versus the Sea Monster, because I fucking hate that movie. It was a retooled King Kong movie. Godzilla wasn't supposed to be in it. The human aspect in that is, like, the lowest of the low, like, where it's just like, oh, this is so fucking stupid. Like, I Godzilla's making doe eyes over the Japanese girl, and I'm like, come on, like, clearly that's supposed to be King Kong simping over the, you know, it's like, come on, like, this is all wrong, like, I don't like this movie, right? So that's, like, the lowest, you know, and I'm trying to give you a base, but what I'm getting at is, just on the sheer merits of Mechagodzilla being the coolest, like, villain that Godzilla fights, like, it's like, this movie, and I'll agree with you that some of the human aspects to it are not as exciting as the movies I cited that are, you know, quote unquote top tier or whatever, but it's also not Godzilla versus the Sea Monster level for me either. Like, I like how you know, they've got, like, the the guy who comes across as like a villain at first, because he's dressed all in black and he's smoking his cigarette and you think there's something nefarious about him, but then it turns out he's a secret agent for good, and like he's an Interpol agent and was watching out for the guys the whole time and everything. And like, I like all the science fiction-y, like, I don't know what it is. It's just, you know, for me, it's like, oh, space. Like, even if these guys are aliens and they're alien monkeys or whatever the deal is, right? Like, at least there's some aspect of explanation of, oh, you know, this is an invasion force and they're using a Mechagodzilla to invade the Earth. And, you know, like that whole aspect to this, I find a bit more interesting than the other movies with a, shall we say, less than, you know, exciting human element to it. But I will agree with you. Like, I know I did totally fall asleep the first time I tried to watch this. So, or revisit it or whatever. And then the other thing too, that I feel like always pointing out, because I always talk about this shit, this is not an upgraded thing. I did not bust this out of the plastic. Like, this is a DVD that I've had for many, many years. It's the Sony TriStar DVD. And I pulled it out again. And you know what's ironic about that is, we're talking about the 50th anniversary of this film, and the DVD has right on the top 50th anniversary. But I think then, when this DVD came out, it was the 50th anniversary of Godzilla.
Oh, yeah.
I think. And now it's the 50th anniversary of Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. So by that math, I'm like, holy fuck, like, wait, does that mean Godzilla's like, am I adding wrong? Like that's crazy, right? Godzilla came out in what, 1954, right? Mm-hmm. So like, that's like, what is it? Like, so Godzilla's almost what, 75 years old or something like that? Like, I'm like, damn. Okay. Anyway, it's tripping me out. But what are your thoughts on, I mean, I know you said like some of the human element put you to sleep, but is there anything else you want to elaborate on? Do you want to talk about like what your thoughts are on Mechagodzilla or anything, like the character itself?
Oh, I think Mechagodzilla himself is great, and I think I would rank him above King Ghidorah as my favorite. And to me, there's like three standout scenes in this movie for different reasons. The first standout scene is the reveal of Mechagodzilla when the facade of his Godzilla form like burns away, and you've got this like really great like kind of jazzy music. It's like ba-dum, 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 da-da, and you've got all these different cuts to like Mechagodzilla's. Like, you've got the revolving hand missile thing, and you've got like the close-up of the MG on his arm, and you know his eyes, which are just car headlights. But man, like, I just love that scene. That scene is so great. The other scene that sticks with me, and it disturbed me as a little kid, and to this day it still disturbs me, is Angus getting his jaw broken.
Angus, man, Angus get, like, that's, I don't know if it's the origin of, but it's one of the, like, Angus got his wallet taken in that scene. And, like, you feel bad for bro, like, because he's like, oh, my God, man. Like, because you're like, when you watch that scene, you're like, holy fuck, dude's going to kill him. Like, he's going to kill him. And I guess luckily it's like, oh, what, he kind of Fs him up, but he can still, like, slither off and run off to like live another day or whatever. But you feel bad for bro when he gets effed up like that. And you know what else like probably disturbed you? And I thought you were going to go here too, but I'll just bring it up because they're both levels of disturbing. Like, there's so much like blood in this.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when Angus gets fucked up, there's a lot of blood. And then when Mechagodzilla has that battle, that what is it, the second battle with Godzilla, and it's like he gets nailed in the neck, and then Godzilla's juggler is like squirting fucking ninja scroll blood like all over the fucking place. Like, and I'm just like, that blood spray was always like, whenever I see it, like even today when I see it, I go, whoa, like that's so like wild. Like, Godzilla is so like, it's such a bloody mess in this movie. And that's like one of those things. It's like, it, you know, it's like when Christopher Reeve gets like thrown through the fucking the window in the diner, and he's like, oh, I'm bleeding, you know, and he's like freaking out about it. It's almost like Godzilla has that. It was like, oh, Godzilla's like, I'm bleeding, like, what's going on? And like, it does kind of freak you out.
And the other scene that stands out, and I've only ever watched this scene in its entirety twice, is when Lady does her song to summon King Caesar. Like, it just goes on for way too long, and I fast forward through it or skip it almost every time.
Can we talk about like how similar in tone and theme King Caesar is to Mothra? Like, I mean, doesn't it just feel like doesn't King Caesar just feel like a poor man's I mean, instead of the two Peanuts singers, the two twin girls, now it's just one lady who has visions. And like, it's weird, she has that vision in the beginning, and they actually like show you Ghidorah in that vision, but like, it's like that's never really proven true, or you know what I mean, like if it was some kind of red herring or something to throw you off the trail or something. I don't know, but
your Mothra thing is not far off the mark, because I believe one of the original
ideas,
yes, it was going to be Godzilla, Angulus, and Mothra, but someone at Toho nixed that. They didn't want Mothra for whatever reason. I think they wanted a new monster, maybe to try and sell some toys or something, but so they kind of like, I guess, they got rid of Mothra, but then I guess they maybe kept some of those elements. And just
It's kind of like the poor man's Mothra, you know, it's like the off-brand Mothra or some shit, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, we'll have our ancient princess talk to King Caesar, you know, it's like, okay. And like these alien guys, like the fact that they turn out to be like alien monkeys, like that kind of reminds me a little bit of V. Like, it's like the guys came down and they supposedly looked human, and then when they pulled off their faces, they were like lizard men, right? But in this case, it's like these guys are like weird outer space ape men for whatever reason. But it there's something eerie about it. Like when you first encounter that, and the guy's got like the half ape face, and I don't know what it is. It's like you keep wanting to stare at it and go, that can't be right. And you're like, but it is. And you're like, but that can't be right. And it's like, but you're like, but he is half ape, or he is an ape underneath, or whatever it is. And it's just, it's like this really, I don't know why. It's like, it's such an off-putting image, you know, like that half-faced ape or whatever. And then when they like defeat some of those guys, they like sort of melt back into their ape form or something. And it's like, it's quite, I don't know, to me, it's very eerie imagery.
And then the thing that always kind of made me laugh, and I remember pointing this out to a friend of mine, and it kind of, I think it destroyed his view, but like, at the end, when the ape commander gets killed, it's like you see him revealed, and he's got like these little like spikes or something on his face. But my comment was, I was like, dude, it looks like someone like stood over him and poured a bag of bugles over his face, because it looks like bugle crumbs, or like part of the bugles. And that like destroyed my buddy, because he just kept like dying laughing. And to this day, like if we're talking Godzilla movies, he'll bring it up. He's like, oh, remember the ape commander with the bugles on his face? And we start laughing.
That's funny. I guess there's probably multiple comparisons you could make as far as like Mecha Godzilla goes, but like, it's like, you know, there's things that you could argue like Mecha Godzilla influenced. Like you could say, like, you know, I mean in a really far off distant way, like you could point to like things like, oh, isn't the cyborg Superman like a version of Mecha Godzilla in a way? Or, you know, like characters like that, where they have their mechanical opposites. And then like something that stood out to me, like especially because he pretend, you know, the cyborg Superman pretends to be Superman, right? But also, like, I was thinking of Faker, you know, like from Masters of the Universe, you know. And it's like, in a lot of those interpretations, it's like, you know, especially the Filmation cartoon, when Faker shows up, he's identical to He-Man. It's not like this, you know, garish, you know, colored, you know, clown version of He-Man with like Skeletor's armor, like the figure was, where it's like, how would anyone mistake that clown for He-Man, like, is anyone's guess. But like, when it's that identical thing, and then again, you start to chip away at that, you know, it's almost like, you know, Arnold is the Terminator. You start to chip away at the flesh, and then underneath you're like, oh wow, this is a mechanical fake, you know, a mechanical fakery or whatever. And so it made me think of Faker. I mean, I'm sure there's like other go-to examples you could point to as far as like mecha stuff. You know, I mean, I know, you know, eventually they have their own version with Kong where it's like Mecha Kong too, but it's like, I don't know what I think, because we're designed that way. Like we love Transformers, we love Gundam, we love mecha. It's like, I think guys like us, we're going to naturally gravitate toward Mechagodzilla, like he's going to be a top tier villain. And but then it's like, is he's not exactly like a backward opposite like Bizarro, but he certainly is like the anti version of whatever the character is. You know, it's like Mechagodzilla is like the anti version of Godzilla. You know, he's the Venom to Godzilla's Spider-Man or something, you know what I mean? Like something along those lines, where it's like he's this mirror image that is kind of evil, and or at least, I don't know, maybe it's just a tool that's used for evil by these aliens. Like, I guess if a good person was piloting it, maybe it wouldn't, you know, be as evil or whatever. But, you know, it's cool looking, like, and it does things that are like super cool. Like that moment where like King Caesar and Godzilla are both trying to like stare him down, like they're both going to tag team him. But then it's like, the head like does something that's completely inhuman, because it turns all the way around, and then the head, you know, the head zaps it with its like, you know, fake mecha atomic breath. It nails King Caesar, but then like the foot rockets like nail Godzilla, and it's just like this inhuman way, but it brings that sort of, you know, targeting system mechanical aspect to the character, where he's like, he basically can nail two like living beings, but it's like, it's with this kind of mechanical precision. And it, I don't know, it's just a lot of those things, it comes off as like just a cool villain.
I remember my buddy, we would pause the movie and try to like figure out like just how well armed is Mechagodzilla, because he's got the rainbow eye beams, which I think are just great. I mean, the way that they come across, it's like, you know, whenever you see like Ultraman do a Spacium beam, it's like that effect is so cool. Like Mechagodzilla's like rainbow eye beams, they're on the same level of just how cool they are as a visual. But it's like, he's also got the, you know, the breath, he's got like the little lightning bolt from the chest, and then what I think is really cool is like the revolving like missiles,
and
he's like, also got, he's got the like the, you know, the tow missiles or whatever. Like he's so like well armed, but I just remember my buddy and I, we would pause it and be like, all right, he's got this and he's got this, and I'm like,
I mean, he's got his personal force field too.
Yeah,
like
the force
where he
field.
Spins where he spins his head around, and then the, like stuff like that is always cool to me, because like Godzilla even is like, oh, I'm going to try to bust through it, but even Godzilla's hands are getting all like heated up from touching the force field and stuff. So like, there's just, he does seem extremely well armed. Right.
And then, what puts it across for me is like, there's that scene where it's like, there's so many explosions and things going off, and like Godzilla is trying to, it's like Godzilla is trying to like get King Caesar on his feet and moving. And there's so many explosions. It feels like a scene from a war movie. It's like a buddy is trying to drag his comrade out of the field of fire. It's like, but you're like, but they're giant monsters. But then it's like, you've seen so many scenes like that where like a soldier is trying to help his buddy. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, get out of the field of fire, the grenades, explosions, the mortars, like whatever. Come on, bro. I gotcha. It's like, even though they're giant monsters, there's that like the visual, and you want to like humanize them, I guess, you know. Like feeling sorry for Angulus. It's like, dude, like get King Caesar off the battlefield, bro, come on.
Well, yeah, and that's it's like basically they're both dealing with like incoming, you know, like it's like they're in the shit, literally, like in the kaiju shit, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, but it's, yeah, it is pretty crazy.
souls, purple skies, motorcycles, the hero who cries, all on covers of comic books that sell the best. But what sells more than the rest? Monkeys, covers with monkeys. Yes, you know you gotta stock the monkeys. Hey, hey, stock the monkeys. Hey, hey. Celebrating the tradition of apes in comics, for 2024, Gorilla Grodd has transformed JL May into JL April. Honestly, he does that a lot. Exploring a phylum of amazing apes, such as
Batman Annual number 23,
Wonder Woman number 170,
Kong on the Planet of the Apes, issue 1,
Angel and the Ape,
The Helmet of Fate, Detective Chimp,
Showcase number 77,
JLA versus Godzilla versus Kong,
Swamp Thing volume 2, annual 3,
Kong Gorilla issues 1 through 4,
with a host of podcast all-stars like
The Bat Pod,
Resurrections, an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast,
Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast,
Dolly for Flanger,
The Quarterbin Podcast,
Coffee and Comic,
Once Upon a Geek,
Fanholes Podcast,
Married with Content with John and Maggie,
Campus Comics Cast,
and many more. Look for the hashtag JLApril2024 on social media, the podcast crossover event that doesn't monkey around.
JLApril.
Really? Monkey around? This is what you're giving me? I don't know why I agreed to this.
Stick to the script, monkey boy!
Do we want to talk about how it's eerie that they cast the same guy that was Dr. Sarazawa in the original Godzilla to play the professor in this movie?
Yeah, and they're both kind of like forced to work on giant destructive weapons that kill Godzilla.
Yeah, and that they don't really want to, but they're forced into it.
That's something I don't think I was aware of as a kid. It's like these Showa movies reuse a lot of the same actors.
Mm-hmm. Well, because Toho had their contracted actors stuff, right? Like, yeah.
As a little kid, you're not aware of like contract players or, you know, that kind of stuff. It's like I think as a little kid, I was more cognizant of like some of the female actresses reappearing. I guess that's more what I was in tune to. I don't know. But when I got older, I was like, isn't that Dr. Sarazawa? You're like, okay, I'm going to. It's like, oh, now I have the Internet Movie Database and I can just go and look it up. But like back, you know, 1989, I couldn't look it up or, you know, any of that.
I think even now, like with some of the Japanese films, I don't know how reliable the Internet Movie Database can be, but I think for more famous movies like this, I think I'm seeing like it's a little easier to track, like, because I was looking also at the guy who plays the, you know, the secret agent man and stuff like that, because he has a familiar look to him. And I'm like, oh, look, he was on like all these Ultraman shows. He was on all these Super Sentai. He was on like Lady Snowblood, and he was in the basically Lone Wolf and Cub movies, like the Shogun Assassin movies and stuff. So it's like he was in all kinds of stuff, like and I mean, of the human element, I know you said you were paying more attention to the ladies. And it's like, it's funny, like, I feel like the cutest one is the I guess she's not really a reporter lady, but she was like the archaeologist, like, lady taking the photos of everything like that. Like, I think she's pretty cute. But I guess what I was going to get at was, I think secret agent guy is like the most, like, I don't know, charming, like the most engaging of all the characters, because I feel like, you know, the brothers kind of seem like the same. It's like that seems to be like they were writing two different movies, and like the brothers and the daughter of the one professor, like those seem like holdovers from like the script that had Mothra and King Ghidorah in it. And then when they started introducing new elements, they're like, well, what about this cool secret agent guy? And what about this cute girl who's like, you know, keeping tabs on all the architecture and everything. And so I think I was more drawn to those characters rather than, you know, the I don't know, you know, it's like the brothers seem like the same doofless guys that are in all Godzilla movies. Like they're trying to do good, but, you know, they're kind of almost helpless, right? The monkey alien men easily like take their wallets, beat them up or whatever. Whereas I feel like the Interpol guy does a bunch of cool stuff and saves their asses the whole movie. And then even when he gets caught, it's like he gives the Dr. Sarazawa guy, even though it's not Dr. Sarazawa, like it gives him like a redemption arc, because it's like, okay, yeah, he helped them like fix Mechagodzilla, but then they both like sort of break out of their shackles and take down the main bad guys. And then the other thing I was going to joke with you about is like, especially in the dub, because I did get a chance to watch the dub along with the, you know, the subtitled version, and they keep talking about, oh, this is space titanium, you know. It's like yeah. It's like, oh, it's like I feel like doing our current gag of the day where it's like, you see, it's titanium, but you see it's from space. because it's from outer space, you understand? Like, you know, and it's just like, it's like that always cracks me up. But then the thing that I thought was funny was he's got his own like sonic pipe instead of a sonic screwdriver or whatever, like that pipe that gets him out of all kinds of jams because it's got the special metal and stuff. And I was just like, oh dude, this is like this professor's own sonic screwdriver, but instead of it being a screwdriver, it's like that little pipe that helps break them out and helps like, you know, mess with you know, I think like the Mechagodzilla's like, you know, servos or whatever it does. And so I was like, oh, this gets them out of all kinds of cool jams and stuff.
I think as a little kid, this was one of those Godzilla movies where as much as I liked it, it took like 20 minutes to get going, because it's like, you know, you were just going through some of the human characters and it feels like there's way too many human characters.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
may be part of what you were talking about, like the leftover Mothra script or whatever. It's like, I think you got like way too many human characters we're following, and then it's just, I think it is about 20 minutes until like fake Godzilla attacks Angulus. It's just like, but as a little kid, you're just like, okay, come on, I want to get to the monsters, and you're really tempted to fast forward through all of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think too, maybe like that aspect, I'll agree, like maybe there could have been some consolidation, because I honestly, I don't think you needed the two brothers. Like, yeah. I think you just, I think the Interpol agent, the professor, and then one young, doofy, heroic guy is enough. Like, you didn't need two of them. And to be, you know, and I know everybody's going to hate this because they want their ladies to be in the movies and the agency and all that other stuff. But I think you could have, again, kind of like the two brothers, like, I think at minimum, like, you know, you could have gotten away with one leading lady, but I think, you know, probably two would have been good enough, not three. You know what I mean? Like either have the one daughter who's interested in the archaeological aspects, or you have the one pretty lady who's nobody's daughter and she's interested in the archaeological aspects that goes off with the one leading guy. And then, you know, yes, you have the priestess who occasionally is there and has to sing to awaken Caesar or Mothra or whoever. But I don't think you needed, you know, just like I don't think you needed like, you know, two leading men and the Interpol agent. Like, you know, it's like I don't think you needed like three ladies as well. Like, it just seems like there's so many characters in this. It's like, what's next? You know, were there going to be like there's the commander of the ape men, there's the ape men's guard. I mean, I'm surprised we didn't have a sexy super evil Sentai hot ape woman lady. Like, that might have made it more interesting for me to keep watching, right? Like a lady in like, you know, I don't know, what do you call it, like bullet brazier or something, you know, that was like a sexy ape lady and is like super hot until they like shoot her in the head and then she turns back into an ape woman or something, you know. But I don't know,
that probably would have disturbed me too as a kid.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it all would have been disturbing. Yeah. Did you ever have like any like Mechagodzilla toys or anything that like it stood out to you as far as like, because I feel like maybe I had like some kind of like, you know, one of those like PVCs or whatever they call, you know, those little kind of vinyl type things or whatever. But I don't think I have any of that stuff now. But I mean, I think that was one of the attractions too. Like, I bet you Mechagodzilla sold either a lot of model kits or toys or, you know, cool vinyls or whatever it is, because I just think he has I think it's tailored design for guys like us, but I think he just has such a cool look to him. And then the fact that he's so like, well, you know, he's got all these cool powers and armaments and all that kind of stuff.
I had a few toys of the 90s Mechagodzilla. Like, I've never owned anything of this version, which is weird because like, this is my favorite
look
for Mechagodzilla. Like, I liked the 90s one. I really liked the Millennium, you know, Kiryu Mechagodzilla. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a great look.
Yeah.
This one is my favorite, but I've never had any toys of it. It's like 2005 or six. Like, I imported some stuff. Like, I imported the vinyl of Hedra and a few other things. And then there was a short period of time where you could go to like KB when those were still around, and you could get vinyls of like Mothra or Gigan or whoever. And I owned some of those, but it seemed like whenever there was like a Mechagodzilla, you know, classic 70s version, like I could never find it. Or if I did, it would be, you know, at a toy show when it's already jacked up to $40. And I'm just like, nah. But I remember, like, I don't know if you ever watched this film, but I remember watching Ready Player One, and having read the book, I knew Mechagodzilla was going to be a big part of that final battle. And I was like, oh man, I can't wait. And in my head, this is the one I pictured. Mm. We didn't get that. We didn't get the 90s version. We didn't get the Kiryu version. We got some kind of like made up version. And that so disappointed me. I was like, oh, you got the rights from Toho to have Mechagodzilla, but you couldn't use an existing one. You had to make up your own. And that like so disappointed me. It took me out of the movie. I'm like, oh, come on. You had three you could have picked and you made up your own. That's bullshit.
Yeah. There's something about the lead like monkey alien general guy that seems like so, I don't know, sleazy or whatever. And it's funny because it's just, it's nothing that I can really isolate, but it's like the way he just drinks and smokes and, you know, and it's funny. I'm looking at like their outfits and how they have like little monkeys on their belts. Like, and I don't know why. I just think that's like super funny. Like it's like, yeah. It's like I don't know. It's just, it's like they're swarmy, but like trying to, I don't know, be suave and charming or something. I don't know. But then they've got monkeys on their belts. So it's like, I don't know. It kind of makes me laugh.
The whole ape aspect is interesting to me because I'm like, okay, it's the 70s. They were still making Planet of the Apes movies. Mm-hmm. I guess they were just really popular in Japan, where they were like, someone at like Toho was like, oh, these ape movies are really popular over here. Like, let's put a few apes in Godzilla. That'd be great.
Doesn't it feel like it's like one of those things where it's like, the Japanese just thought it was a cool visual aesthetic, but there was like no real story or understanding of, you know, what made that aesthetic popular or work in terms of a story. It's just like, oh, this cross is cool. Let's hang our Ultraman on a cross without understanding like the religious context of what you were doing. Like, it's like, it just feels like this is in its own way something similar, where it's like, oh, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we made ape men? And you're like, oh, well, that's inherently eerie because, you know, in the Planet of the Apes, it's like saying, oh, well, they've now supplanted humanity as the dominant life force on the planet. And it's like, you still have that eerie aspect where you're looking at their face going, wait a minute, that's not a human being. And that's not really an alien. It's like a man half ape half thing. And it just, it's that weird, eerie feeling you feel when they have like those you know, in like Full Metal Alchemist, where you have like a chimera and it merges the girl to get, you know, it's like that weird thing where you're like, oh, you just it's like deep down in your core, you know, it's unnatural and it feels wrong and eerie, like that these things are like fused together rather than something that's made by nature. You know, you can tell it's just two things that got smushed together like unnaturally, and it makes you uncomfortable just by looking at it, you know. So it's like I think that's successful if in terms of, you know, having a group of villains that makes your audience feel uncomfortable, right? Because I guess you know you're supposed to feel that way, so it's like innately doing that job for you just by like the visual aesthetics of the villains and stuff. Can we talk about like I think this is not quite as cool as like Godzilla, like, you know, doing the run and super drop kick and all this other stuff, but like I kind of like the I guess I'll call it like the like Karate Kid like magnet move that like Godzilla does against Mechagodzilla, where it's like he's willing him to like come back to him, and it's funny because at first you might be like, well, what the hell is he doing? But it's like, oh, they're like, Godzilla has turned himself into a magnet, and like now he's like willing it's like Mechagodzilla's trying to like fly off, but he's like by sheer will, he's like forcing him back because he turned himself into a magnet. And I'm like, I know most people are like, oh, that's dumb, but I'm like, oh no, that's so fucking cool, because like Godzilla's like, I'm not, it's almost like that's that moment where he gets like his Super Saiyan like round two power, where he like repowers himself up and is like, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna F you up, and like he gets his second wind and all that stuff. So like I think it's a really, like, it basically, if you were suffering through all this, you know, the human aspect of it, it's like that's a cool payoff for you if you're a little kid and you're watching and waiting for the cool fight scene and everything.
It feels like an idea from a early Silver Age DC comic or something. Superman allowed himself to get struck by electricity and he became a magnet to bring back Luthor's escaping spaceship. But as a kid, I always thought it was weird, because like I was like, wait, so if you get struck by lightning in real life, do you turn into a magnet? I don't want to get struck by lightning. Like, you know, I don't want like forks and knives and everything like sticking to me. That sounds terrible. But like, I don't know. I mean, we understood because, you know, like you said, the dub tells you what's happening in case you are a little kid in the audience and you're like, why, what? And you go back and, you know, you watch it again. You're like, okay, I see, you know, but it makes its own sense. It doesn't make logical real world sense, but in the world of giant monsters and space apes, you're like, okay, you get it and you go with it because you kind of have to. And it's something he never uses again, which also kind of goes into that like whole like Silver Age DC idea. It's like, well, Superman only had this ability for one comic and it was too powerful.
I feel like anytime electricity strikes Godzilla, it's almost a carryover from that whole King Kong sea monster thing, where electricity was Kong's power up. And then somehow, because of the sea monster movie, it then became Godzilla's power up, even though that shouldn't really be the case. But it continued to carry over into other movies like this.
Well, I'm with you like on that aspect. I've never liked Son of Godzilla or Godzilla and the Sea Monster. Like, those two are the bottom of the barrel.
I think that's fair that those are like bottom barrel Showa era films for sure. Yeah, I mean, overall, I don't have bad things to say about this movie other than, yes, I know that some of the human aspect is a little slow, but I think, again, like I was saying, I think that's fairly true in general, you know, so I'm not going to hold that against this movie. You know, maybe it's easier to throw tomatoes at, you know, like we said, the sea monsters and the Son of Godzillas, but I think this is at least, if not mid-tier, you know, upper mid-tier, you know, type Godzilla movie.
Yeah, and there are parts of it that I find interesting where, you know, it's like the whole, like, the original idea of including Mothra, like, you know, we talked about that, but then it's like other like production things where it's like they did film this movie in Okinawa, and I believe they got like tax breaks. And then when they're on that ship, you know, it feels like they're on that ship forever. Like that was also a kind of a promotional thing. And I think on one of the Japanese posters, you can see like a tiny little picture of the ship that they're on. It's like, oh, in promotion with this, you know, ship, it's in the movie, like we actually filmed there and you should go to this ship and, you know, spend time there because we're promoting them and it's great. Everything's all great. And I don't know. It's like whenever you watch like Kamen Rider or Super Sentai and they're filming in a theme park, you're like, okay, like they got a little money from the park and they filmed there to kind of promote the park and all that stuff. Like as a kid, you're completely ignorant to that stuff. You're just like, oh wow, they filmed in a theme park. I want to go there. But as an adult, you're like, oh, there's some money changing hands there to promote each other or something. Mm-hmm. And also, what I understand is that if this movie hadn't made as much money as it did, like they wouldn't have made Terra of Mechagodzilla.
Oh, because, okay.
Like Godzilla versus Megalon didn't make that much money. Like they didn't lose money, but it was kind of a disappointment.
Right.
But then they were like, oh, what the hell? Like this is the anniversary of Godzilla. 20 years, we have to do a movie. Okay, well, what do you got? So they made this, and then it was a surprise hit. Like, oh, wow, like Godzilla still got some life in him. Like, we made a lot of money. Let's make another one. And then Terra of Mechagodzilla was it for a while, unfortunately. Because I think, I don't know, to me, like, Terra of Mechagodzilla is superior to this one. But
It's been a while since I've seen Terra. So, I mean, I know I like this movie, and I like Terra better than I like the Heisei Mechagodzilla movie. I could tell you that much, but that's my vague ranking / recollection of how I like these films.
I like it. I just hate how Rodan gets treated.
Mm.
And also, they don't call him Rodan. They call him Radon or whatever. Like, that always bugged me.
And one shot that I really like in this movie is the one where the pretty lady is out on the balcony and then they pull out to the dude. Like, I'm like, oh man, that must have took, I don't know, I feel like that took some doing, even though it's like a small little clip and deceptively simple, but I bet you that took like a lot of, like, you know, oh, get on the walkie-talkie, tell the pretty lady to come on the balcony, okay, tell her to walk back into the balcony, okay, you come into frame now, hit your mark, don't fuck it up, you know, like that. Like I feel like that took more work than it looked. But yeah, and he's the bad monkey guy. Like, he not only is he sipping his cognac, but he's got like a cigar, and like it's just like he's all about like the finer things on Earth life, even though he's got a fucking monkey on his belt or whatever. It's like, I wore a belt with the monkey face on it. It was the style at the time. You know, okay.
Derek, the next con you go to, you should cosplay as him.
Cosplay as monkey guy.
Yeah. Monkey man.
Monkey man guy. I had the monkey on my belt. I think the tough part won't be finding the monkey for the belt. It'll be finding this shiny ass fucking space titanium thread metal or whatever fabric that is, right? You see, it's from space because it's space titanium, you see. It's like, oh, it's from space. I see. I think, I don't know, I feel like that's all I've got on this. I don't know, do you have any other final thoughts? Is there any notes or things that you wanted to cover that we haven't tackled yet about this film?
I don't think so. I mean, I have a lot of fond memories of watching this as a kid with my friends, or, you know, when I was a little older and Sci-Fi Channel would play Godzilla movies. Like, if this was one of the ones that if it was on, I would drop what I was doing and sit down
and start watching it. I think it's good. I mean, like I said to you, I think my memory of it is that I know for sure it was in some kind of 5-pack of VHS tapes or whatever, and I always loved the design of Mechagodzilla. I thought it looked really cool, and you know, I enjoyed, you know, I think also I, you know, for the most part as a kid, I enjoyed watching my heroes, and I consider Godzilla one of my heroes, like fighting their evil opposites, you know, and Mechagodzilla is one of the coolest evil opposites there is. So, you know, I you know, for me, I can't say, you know, anything too bad about this movie. You know, I enjoy it. It's fun. I think it's, I would say it's at least mid-level, if not upper level, of the Showa era films, and I really like it. All right, well, I guess that's going to do it for tonight. If you guys have any comments, questions, and or concerns, you can reach us at fanholespodcast@gmail.com. We are on all kinds of social media, so if you want to reach us there, you can reach us on Facebook, X, Tumblr. We appreciate all the likes, hearts, shares, and retweets that we receive. And we can be streamed. We're on Apple Podcasts, and we're on all kinds of streaming. So you can check us out on the podcatcher of your choice. And if I don't know, maybe this is your favorite Godzilla movie or your least favorite Godzilla movie, and you've got some kind of angry emails, or you're mad that we think monkey men people are freakish or whatever, you can send us your angry emails at fanholespodcast@gmail.com. And until the next time, this is going to be Derek WC signing off.
And this is Justin.
Monkey men. Monkeys is the craziest peoples. Monkeys smoking their cigars and drinking their cognacs and building Mechagodzillas is the craziest peoples.